Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Kremling. I am joined by Connor Orr of the Weekside Podcast. And Connor, we have a little bit of potpourri in this week's show. We're going to touch on a couple different topics, one of them being Ben Roethlisberger staying in Pittsburgh. We're going to look at the Bears' possibilities at quarterback. Russell Wilson, shruggy shoulder. I don't really know if that seems realistic. And we're going to talk about the shrinking middle class in the NFL. But we're also, I think the best part of the show, and you're going to have to wait until last for it, is Connor's going to berate me for some of my free agent rankings in our upcoming top 200 list.
That's what we call a tease. That's right. You got to wait until the end, or you have to press the plus 15 second button about a million times, and your phone's not going to handle it because you have too many pictures on there, and it's not going to work out the way you want it to. So just relax and listen to the whole thing on regular speed, too, not 1.5 speed.
Yeah, maybe even slow it down just so you really absorb everything that comes out here.
Sheldon Rankins.
All right, let's we'll get to that in a bit. In a little bit, we promise. It'll be wonderful, but the whole show will be wonderful. And we're starting it off with Ben Roethlisberger. And look, this was sort of an inevitability. As long as he was coming back, it seemed like it was going to be Pittsburgh or nothing. And quite frankly, Connor, Steelers don't have a whole lot of options here at quarterback if it's not Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, it made me rethink a little bit the Packers' decision. And, you know, I think the Packers are in a different spot because they have a generational talent like Aaron Rodgers, who's still a relatively healthy guy, whereas Ben Roethlisberger has struggled with injuries. I mean, he even said up until recently didn't really retool his diet or do any of the things that all these other quarterbacks are doing to help their longevity. And so, you know, if you're Kevin Colbert, like, that's the kind of guy who should have done the Jordan Love thing and had a first-round pick ready to stand by and come in when something like this went terribly wrong. But they're just making the same mistake that the Giants made with Eli Manning, which is, you know, trying to ride this thing until the wheels come off. And, you know, I don't believe that they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender based on the way that he played last year. Now, if that was just a year of getting over injuries and he has one more healthy year left in the tank, I think that changes things. But is there anything that you saw last year that leads you to believe that this is a guy who can push a team to a Super Bowl, even if they are able to keep that generational defense together?
I know, and that's kind of what it is to me. We look at some of these teams. I think the 2018 Bears, who were, I would have put them right there with like the 2015 Broncos, as far as sort of the last decade of great, great carry you to a championship type of defenses. It is tough to keep that window open with these just super elite stand on your head defenses, because even if, like, you look at what happened with the Bears since 2018. Pretty much the same personnel there. Vic Fangio is gone, Chuck Pagano in. I didn't think there was a huge drop-off with Pagano as far as sort of down-to-down play. I think the drop-off came from the fact that they went from 35 turnovers or 35 takeaways to 18 a year. And there is some luck baked into takeaway stuff. And you have a Steelers defense that has had a lot of takeaways and gotten a lot of sacks. And they are built for that. Teams that do create pressure do tend to take the ball away, but to take it away at that rate where you're going to lead the league, where you're going to get two a week, it's just not something you can really count on.
Yeah, I mean, they're not a 13-3 team again next year. You know, maybe they're a 10-win team, but what does that look like in the AFC North when, you know, maybe Cleveland wins 10 games? What if Baltimore comes back? And, you know, Baltimore was almost on the down curve of that luck factor that we're kind of talking about last year. And what if that flips again and the ball starts bouncing their way again? So, I don't know. I just think it's a mistake. Now, you know, the argument that you could make for Kevin Colbert, and I did address that when I wrote about it this week, was that really there wasn't a true chance to find value unless in 2018 he drafted Lamar Jackson. That was the one opportunity you would have had to get a quarterback at a value spot and a guy that you didn't need above that. You know, Minka Fitzpatrick has been more than valuable for them at that spot that they spent that first round pick on. You know, I don't know what else you would have wanted them to do. I mean, would you have rather them take a quarterback instead of Devin Bush? And if so, that quarterback would have been Dwayne Haskins, and they have Dwayne Haskins anyway. And signed him to a reserve futures deal. So on one hand, it's like, you know, is he probably doing the responsible thing as a GM? Yes, but does it look bad that you're this desperate to make things work and you're also complicating the salary cap for next year when, you know, assuming he retires after this season.
And if we can continue to mount an airtight defense for Kevin Colbert here, he did take Mason Rudolph with the 76th pick of the 2018 draft. Now, and I've had this conversation and this argument with lots of people over the years. Day two quarterbacks usually don't work out. I don't know exactly what the rate is, but, you know, you think back to, you know, whether it's the Giants with Davis Webb or the Saints with Garrett Grayson. You take these day two flyers on guys, they get to day two for a reason. Guys who are sort of, you know, no one's quite a surefire quarterback, but, you know, essentially, if the league feels really good about you, you're coming off the board in the first round. Mason Rudolph was a guy who came in with downfield accuracy questions, and you know, you've kind of seen it. It just hasn't worked out for him. There's no reason to think he's going to be the next guy in Pittsburgh, and that's how it usually works out with these day two picks. So you know, they did take a flyer on the guy. It didn't work out, and now you kind of, you know, you shrug your shoulders. I'll say this about their offense. Last September and October, when they sort of rolled out, you know, you think of the Ben Roethlisberger offenses over the years. It's those, you know, that classic, you know, it, of the aughts and the 2010s, that classic, you know, static formations, no motion, ISO routes. And then last year, all of a sudden, they run out all this, you know, pre-snap motion, and it's this quick strike horizontal passing attack that you've never seen from the Steelers, certainly during the Roethlisberger era. And, you know, by like mid-October, it's like, okay, this is neat. Now let's see you blend in the old stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see it. Let's start now. 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 And it just never came. And look, Roethlisberger in his prime was as good a thrower of the football as anyone in the league. I mean, is some of the things he was able to do with guys hanging off his body, you know, he's not going to be at that level again. But you did see flashes. I do think back to the game that they won in Baltimore earlier in the season where, you know, that was sort of that back-and-forth battle. Lamar ended up throwing a bunch of interceptions, had some turnovers in that game, and ended up being the Steelers' win on that Micah Fitzpatrick breakup. But that was a game where the Steelers did nothing in the first half. They came out in the second half, and Roethlisberger said after the game, he was just kind of like, yeah, you know, I saw some things we could exploit, and so we just sort of started, you know, drawing up our own stuff and sort of doing it that way. And it worked against a really good defense on the road. So I feel like maybe it's there. On the other side of the coin, you think back to that Monday night game in Cincinnati late in the year where they did have to score points in somewhat quick fashion and they were completely unable to do so against a defense that wasn't very good at all. So I don't know where they fall. I don't know if it's the kind of thing where I was wondering late in the year, is he worn down, or, you know, in combination with that, is he just sort of, is he so used to not getting hit in this quick strike offense that when he gets put in a situation where he's going to have to hang in and get hit, it's just something he is, you know, whatever, you don't have the taste of blood, you're just not ready to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. I think the one thing that I would say works in Roethlisberger's favor is the elevation of someone like Matt Canada to offensive coordinator. You know, he is the guy that essentially, you know, if you talk about what McVay was running to get to the Super Bowl that first year, I mean, a lot of those ideas came from Matt Canada. I mean, he was the kind of guy that inspired a lot of this. I don't know, you want to call it rethinking the arena league motion, you know, getting guys at full momentum before the snap, all that stuff. I mean, he was one of the guys that was doing that at the beginning and was in on the ground floor of that. Does he have more of that left in him? I think that's a valid question. But if he can do some of that stuff to sort of release the pressure on Roethlisberger, I think that that's something that, again, further legitimizes Colbert's decision, makes it worthwhile. But if not, I mean, you have a sitting duck back there. And I think that to your earlier point about developmental quarterbacks, you know, most of them don't work out, but teams aren't really looking at them the right way. Like, I would say if you get a guy like, you know, like the Ravens do this well, where I think you get someone like Trace McSorley, where you can do five or six different things with him to legitimize his place on the roster, but you can also put him in, and even if he just runs zone read, he's still winning the battle mathematically. You know, and Pittsburgh doesn't have that guy where they can at least gain 2 or 3 yards if they put somebody in that's maybe more of a runner or is more productive when he's on the move. You know, they don't have any of those options. So I think the only thing left is to bet on someone like Canada and see if he can get the best out of the rest of his career.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's like the age-old debate, and I used to have this argument with my former host on this podcast, where do you want the backup quarterback to basically be another version of your starter, or do you want your backup quarterback to be maybe something different, maybe something even if it's not expansive, just something different, something where you can be creative with. And you know, certainly the Steelers, the way they're built right now, the guy they have as a backup is sort of a lesser version of their starter, and we'll see how they do going forward here. Even Dwayne Haskins, if you do think Dwayne Haskins is going to work out, and I don't think there's any reason to really think it at this point, but you know, Dwayne Haskins is stylistically, I mean, he's like Roethlisberger at this point.
He is. I mean, that was the comp of him coming out of college anyway. You know, it was like a Roethlisberger light kind of player. And, you know, I don't necessarily see the same accuracy. But then again, Roethlisberger looked really bad his rookie year, but he had an all-star running game and a great defense and a great team around him, a great offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at the time who could help kind of move him along. And so, yeah, we'll see. I mean, maybe this is a flyer that works out. It's not like it's Haskins, I think, is lower risk and higher reward than some of the other options they could have done.
No, absolutely. Let's head out to Chicago, where we are going to touch on another sad quarterback situation, much sadder than the one in Pittsburgh. Look, Russell Wilson's agent, Mark Rogers, sort of floated this list of teams where Russell Wilson would be willing to be traded to. I'm still in the camp of I don't think Russell Wilson's going anywhere. I think he stays in Seattle. I think they work it out at least for the upcoming season, and we'll see how that plays out with Shane Waldron going out there as a new offensive coordinator. But, you know, the four teams are the Saints, the Bears, the Raiders. Help me out. Who's the fourth one, Connor?
The Cowboys.
The Cowboys, that's right. So all teams that are sort of built to potentially win now. The Bears are the team that you'd circle as, okay, well, they don't have any answers at quarterback at this point. I mean, they're the team that really is a blank slate as far as that position goes. And I just don't know how they would possibly be able to put together a trade package that would please the Seahawks enough to actually make that deal. Because, you know, we talked about this with Sean Watson a little bit. If you are going to trade your franchise quarterback, you want to know who your next quarterback is going to be. And trading with the Bears does not give you that, whereas the other three teams at least might give you an option. Maybe not the Saints, but I don't know, do some sort of sign and trade with Jameis or something like that.
Well, I laugh at the Bears as an option, and really anybody tantalizing the Seahawks with a late first-round pick-led trade package when the Seahawks haven't utilized any of their late first-round picks in years. Like, they just, it's not something that they really see value in. They've traded out of that spot time and time again, or have just flipped it for other assets. And so I think that anybody suggesting that, oh, they're gonna desire this Bears trade package, I think is ludicrous. And I think the other thing too is the Bears are about to make a really bad decision, which is, you know, if you have a GM and a coach who know that they're not going to be there next year if they don't make the playoffs, you know, you have to make a gigantic swing in free agency and get a quarterback to come in and run your offense, or you have to draft somebody and start the clock all over again and hope that you develop them enough to legitimize, you know, you being around for another year. And so I think that there's a lot of, you know, messiness that could come of this, you know, and I don't really know what the right answer is for Chicago, because they were always going to be that last team standing when the music stopped, I think, in musical chairs. You know, Carson Wentz to the Colts made a lot of sense. And once that happened and that move happened, if you're the Bears, you're looking around now and saying, okay, I mean, is it Jameis Winston? You know, can we go and get Derek Carr? I don't know. You know, I don't really know what the options are for them at this point.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think realistically you're looking at the free agent class if you're the Bears right now, and that would be, that, like you said, it would be Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, Jacoby Brissett, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Andy Dalton. I know Trubisky is a free agent here. I wouldn't rule it out, Trubisky working somewhere, but not in Chicago. I mean, there is zero trust in him, and you see it every time they get into a big game where they just completely just dial down the offense and run the most limited stuff they possibly can.
Alex Smith, you know, is a guy who knows Matt Nagy's offense. You know, I don't know. It's really like, you know, and are you counting on him to get you through half of a season? I don't know. I think this is a really complex situation. They, like the Jaguars, rode it too long with a rookie quarterback and kept trying to talk themselves into it. And this is the situation you find yourself in.
Yeah, it's a head scratcher because, like I said, with that defense, if you lose, you know, let's say there's a scenario where you have to, you know, you want Russell Wilson, so you have to part with Khalil Mack. Well, now your defense just went from potentially A-minus to probably a B-minus type of unit. And now do you have enough to win with that? If you're Russell Wilson, you probably just landed with the same type of roster you just left in Seattle, maybe a little bit worse at that point. But yeah, it's not a great situation. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I just keep looking at these names. Brissett, and pray that you can unlock a little bit more out of him. But if it didn't work out with Trubisky, I don't know. Not good.
If you're Bears ownership too, here's the other thing that you have to look at. Do you want, and this is the same question that the Jets could have asked themselves a few years ago. This is the same thing that a lot of owners could have asked themselves a year ago when you're essentially giving your coach and your GM one more year to prove themselves, is what am I going to allow them to do? Am I going to allow them to sign Cam Newton to a ridiculous contract? Am I going to allow them to go trade the farm for someone like Derek Carr? Or am I going to say, no, this is the bed that you guys made. It's time to lie in it. And worst case scenario, if I'm the Bears, you bottom out and you get a top five pick next year with my new coach and my new GM. But I'm not letting you guys mortgage the future just so you can stay around for another few years. You know, it so rarely works out. And I think that people are pointing to Jason Light in Tampa Bay, where, you know, you go all in to sort of save yourself from that embattled stage and you end up winning the Super Bowl. And now you never have to worry about work again, which is great for you. But I don't think it works out that well for a lot of other people. I mean, you know, Les Snead's been making a living off this now for almost a decade, and good for him. And he made a Super Bowl in a similar sort of calculated maneuver. But if it doesn't work out, you're really just sinking the franchise. And the Bears do need such a hard reset. I mean, they really just do need a hard offensive reset that's not coming just by way of free agency this offseason.
Yeah, it's Jason Light remains one of the strangest stories. Jason Light missed with the number one overall pick of the draft, which is usually just absolute death for a general manager. And
drafted a kicker.
Yep, drafted a kicker second round. And he, you know, kept his job, landed Tom Brady, and won a Super Bowl. And I don't know what the lesson is in that, but it's something that happened.
The lesson is to just do insane stuff, and if it doesn't work out, you know, who gives a shit? Sign Tom Brady. You know, I think that's really the lesson for all of us.
Let's take a quick look, or I should say it's more of a quick conversation of what's going to happen this upcoming week. The new league year starts on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. That's obviously going to be sort of the you know, a week from now will be the opening of free agency, whereas this week is going to be sort of the bloodbath, if we could put it as distastefully as possible. The league right now, with the shrinking salary cap, these middle-class guys, if you are not a superstar and you are not on a rookie contract, so many of these middle-class guys are about to get cut and end up out on the open market, where they're then going to have to settle for less than what they thought they were going to be making in 2021 here. And look, with some of these guys, it's expected. It happens every year. Guys who end up on contracts that look bad a year after they sign it get let go, or whatever it might be. But it's going to be to the extreme this year, and it's sort of the continuing just aggressive shrinking of the middle class in the NFL.
I know. It's going to be weird, and I think it's going to alter, you know, all this work that you put in on this top 200 free agent list, Gary, that we're going to talk about here in a minute. It's just going to be completely scrambled when we get into the situation where, you know, all these guys start flying on the market. Like, what about, you know, Jalen Smith being out there and available all of a sudden or something like that? You know, that certainly changes the calculus on a lot of people. Or Zach Ertz, you know, what does he do on the open market, assuming that he's healthy? So I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting. And, you know, the NFL is, at the end of the day, no different than any monolith corporation that any of our lovely listeners listen to, where they're going to use this as an excuse to cut guys that they just didn't really want around anyway and say it was the pandemic and it was a loss of revenue, when in reality they could keep them. So if you're a fan, remember that. If you're an Eagles fan and Zach Ertz catches 11 touchdowns for the Packers next year, you know, just keep that in mind. Don't blame anybody else but your owner.
Well, how about J.J. Watt? Now, J.J. Watt signed after we taped the episode last week, which is, it was even sadder because we did tape it on Monday, and then he rudely waited until Monday evening to do his little social media announcement of where it was going. Very rude of J.J. Watt. But this is kind of, this is a couple things. And by the way, if you were wondering, and I know you were, we had J.J. Watt ranked 9th on the free agent list, assuming he was going to be on the open market. He is not. This Cardinals team, though, there's a lot of talk now. Okay, is it, you know, is it Super Bowl ready? Is this going to be a contender in the NFC? The big hole on the roster, if you're looking at it, that you're going to sort of worry about is at cornerback. They don't have great defensive backs outside of sort of Buda Baker, Byron Murphy, not in Baker's class, but maybe a guy you can be confident in. And they just don't really have the outside guys at this point. Patrick Peterson hitting the open market this offseason. But the upgraded pass rush and J.J. Watt, I think, as a guy who's going to play 40 to 50 snaps a game and maybe have Chandler Jones and who knows, maybe they bring back Hassan Reddick. All of a sudden, you have a really good pass rush. That makes up for that. That makes your mediocre secondary look better than it is. So I think you're going to see what was already an overachieving defense in Arizona is going to be even better in 2021.
You have a good defensive coordinator. And you have some guys like Isaiah Simmons who can diversify your coverage a little bit and, you know, make things at least momentarily hard enough for a quarterback so that your pass rush has a better chance of getting home. And now your pass rush is top 5. And so I think that all that taken into consideration is worth thinking about. Do I think the Cardinals are a Super Bowl team? No. Do I think it's a Super Bowl offensive line? Probably not either. You know, I think that there's some issues there that they need to get after. But that said, I mean, I think that they put themselves in a position to compete. And if you're Steve Keim or you're Cliff Kingsbury, you can't like sit around and wait for that division to come back to you. It's always going to be hard. It's always going to be competitive. And, you know, maybe the Rams, you look at them as a front runner for this year, but I don't see them as that far behind. I mean, I think that they're a team that can win 10 or 11 games next year for sure.
I would like to see a reinvention of this offense. I don't like what they do offensively. I love Kyler Murray, and I think Kyler Murray has solved a lot of their problems just by doing stuff with his legs. And I mean, there are just, when you watch a Cardinals game, there are just no easy throws for Kyler Murray on the field. And that's gotta change the, like, this air raid stuff they're running. You know, it's obvious. It's a lot of quick strike. It's a lot of ISO route stuff. They either have to come up with a new plan, or they really have to upgrade that receiver depth chart beyond DeAndre Hopkins. And they already invested in DeAndre Hopkins here.
Yeah, it's so weird because they run 4 wide sets more than any team in the NFL, and I don't feel like they're getting the ROI on it. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. And if you're going to be that team, you're going to be the 4 wide team, then let's throw the ball 60 times a game and let's make this a real deal air raid offense. But it just seems so, you know, stuck in neutral. And I think that that's going to be the challenge for Cliff Kingsbury this offseason. If Kyler Murray's really been running this system for his entire life, then it's time to take the reins off and let him operate as such.
We'll see here.
Mitochondria, man.
I really want to see something new there in Arizona. But let's do it, Connor. Let's talk about the top 200 free agent list. This is coming out right now. The plan is for it to come out on Tuesday on SI.com, so you can look for it there. It'll just be it'll be quite the event. But just go, just yell at me, and I'll feebly try to defend myself.
I'm gonna start by reading all the names really slowly in an English accent, so it'll be like if you want this to double as like a hypnosis app, you know, mm-hmm. then we can do it that way. If you're trying to fall asleep, then I'll just say, Justin Simmons, safety, Broncos.
This is, and before we start, so are you gonna throw at me? You're gonna throw guys who you were surprised at how high they were or how low they were. Right.
Both, yeah. Okay. So the original plan was for Gary to do a top 100 and then me to do a top 100. And then, you know, we were going to kind of meet in the middle and find a way to average them. But then Gary did a lot of hard work and Connor is super lazy. So instead of me doing my own top 200, I just decided to wait for Gary to do it and then complain about it, which is what you do. This is the millennial way. And, you know, so this is what we're going to do. I think that there are a lot of good things about this list. You and I have talked about the Vic Fangio effect and in conjunction probably the Brandon Staley effect. And so John Johnson is a guy that, you know, and Justin Simmons for that matter, that I'm afraid of if I'm not either of the teams that already know how to use them.
Yep.
And so I think that would affect a little bit of my thought process there. You love Curtis Samuel. You love Curtis Samuel.
I do.
I think he's quite high on this list. What do you have him at? 21.
Right now, and we should mention this is subject to change in the next, 24 hours or so. But
yeah.
Right now he's 21.
And ahead of, you know, I would put Will Fuller. You have Will Fuller at 30, which I would almost flip them. And then Taylor Moten. How is he, like, you've kind of banged a lot of the offensive tackles. Like, Taylor Moten is at 26. Daryl Williams is at 32. And then I think, where's Cam Robinson? Because I remember just looking at that one. Is he even in the top 50? Or is he a little bit deeper than that?
He might be a little bit deeper.
And I think that all of these guys are adequate offensive tackles to the point where, you know, I would venture to argue that if the Chiefs had any of those three guys, that they might have won the Super Bowl.
You know?
And so I think that we saw, and maybe our focus is just attended to that because of the magnitude of the Super Bowl. But at the same time, it's like, man, even like adequate, like Cam Robinson gave up 5 sacks last year. That's good enough to be, you know, in my mind, like a top 30 free agent. I think you're going to get paid like a lot more than some of the guys that are on this list just by virtue of the position. But I think positional value, offensive line, adequate offensive line play has never been more important in the NFL.
That's fair. I might be too low on Moten, and I don't think I'm terribly low on Moten. I mean, he is 26. So, you know, there are the guy I'm really not crazy about, and we've talked about this off the air, Alejandro Villanueva. I would, I think there are just red flags waving all over the place when you're coming out of an offense that just did nothing but quick strike, and you struggled the way you did. I think Villanueva had a great career in Pittsburgh. I would not trust him to be my left tackle if I was shopping for one on the open market here. I just don't think it's going to translate somewhere else. Cam Robinson is a little bit strange. I always get nervous about teams who don't lock up their own draft picks, and the Jaguars are probably not a team that you should look at and as a model franchise. I mean, the reason they have all this cap room going to this offseason is because they drafted so incredibly poorly, and now they don't have anyone to re-sign, or the few guys who they did draft well with, they alienated and pushed them out. So the fact they didn't lock up Cam Robinson, just that in and of itself is kind of a red flag to me. They know him better than anyone, and if they weren't going to make the move to keep him there with all the cap room they have, maybe there's something up. Maybe they know something that we don't know, or maybe this is just what the Jaguars do and they just don't manage their roster very well at all. That might be the more likely scenario.
No, you make a good point. I think when Dave Caldwell was there especially, there was a push to sign homegrown talent, and I think he did do well enough. I mean, he did get some good offensive linemen there, especially when you know, they first had Leonard Fournette, and they made it to the AFC Championship game. There was some talent on that roster, so I agree that there, you know, there was that, you know, and maybe Robinson just didn't flash in that window, and then by the time Tom Coughlin got there and everything got complicated, some of their typical processes just got thrown out the window. I don't know what it was, but you know, if you're Urban Meyer, I think you can't in good conscience start over at that position. Like, I think you at least have to find a one-year stopgap solution. Maybe you franchise him because you have the money anyway, and who cares, you know, and you let him play that 1 year, see if he can protect Trevor Lawrence, and then you hope that the coaching staff that you brought in can develop somebody to take over at some point, or if you hit on some of these other guys. I just think the tackle market in general is going to be bananas. It's going to be such a high-cost thing. I mean, if you can land Trent Williams or something like that, that's great. That's good for you, but he's only going to go to one place, and he's probably not going to pick Jacksonville. You know, he's not going to want to destroy his statistics, you know, but with a rookie quarterback who's going to hold on to the ball for too long. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. I would assume that they're going to keep him just by virtue of, you know, how far are you going to improve yourself in any other way. But I'm not done yelling at you yet. So let's see what else we got here. Chidobe Awuzie is in like the 60s, and this is a guy with elite speed, and his worst season in the NFL was a 60% opposing quarterback completion rating. Like, that's, you know, first 2 years before that, it was in the 50s. And last year he had some injury issues, hamstring issues, and then spent some time on the COVID list. So, and was in a bad defense. So I don't think that, even last year, you kind of throw out the window. And before that, I would have put him as a fairly elite cornerback. The same thing with Shaq Griffin, I thought was a little low on your list, although not as low as Awuzie. And then the other one that I kind of threw up my hands at was like, Sheldon Rankin's barely cracking the top 100. That's a guy that I think if I'm any other team, I look at and say, okay, you know, he doesn't have the pressure stats, but you're playing with Cam Jordan, Trey Hendrickson, you know, all these pass rushers, you know, someone's got to make this happen in the interior. And I think Rankin's was a big part of that in their defense.
I probably banged Rankin's a little bit because I didn't want to, I didn't want to be the guy who can't let go of the draft slot. He was obviously a 12th overall pick, so it's like
not his fault.
If it, you know, if he, I don't want to go too far the other way either. I'm open to Sheldon Rankin's, but like you said, I mean, that's a defense that creates a lot of advantageous matchups for their defensive linemen. The fact that he wasn't terribly productive the last two seasons, and injuries probably had a lot to do with it, and we could see something much better going forward here. What is it? He'll be 27 in April, so there's plenty to go here for Rankins. But as far as the corners go, man, I hate shopping for corners. Like, if you don't have, in my mind, and I do this all the time, in my mind, if you're not sort of a clear-cut number one like Byron Jones a year ago, even though Byron Jones maybe didn't have his best season his first year in Miami, I think he was solid. I think he is a true number one corner. These guys who are sort of on the fringe, I just think there's such, if I could make a baseball metaphor, which no one will understand because this is a football podcast, you know how year-to-year short relievers, they're just, there are always guys who just emerge as like, oh, wow, this guy, you know, he had a 1.6 ERA and he came out of nowhere and did this. I feel like that's what these sort of number two cornerbacks are in the NFL. They're so volatile year to year. And I always hold up Ronald Darby as the example of being like, there are years where you could have looked at Ronald Darby and been like, man, this guy's really good. This is a guy, you know, pay this guy. I mean, get him in there. He's a fringe number one. And then there's other years where it's just like, boy, this guy can't play. You got to get him off the field. Got to upgrade here. I think so many guys fall into that category, and it's just sort of trying to parse the difference here. I will say, in defense of Shaquille Griffin, and I can't remember if you or I wrote him up. I wrote up Dunbar, and maybe you wrote up Griffin, but playing in Seattle has been incredibly stressful on the defensive backs because they've had no pass rush there since like Cliff Avril left. I mean, it's just really difficult to cover when there's no pass rush in front of you. So I am open to Griffin sort of being that breakout guy and being a true number one. I haven't seen it, and it just makes me so nervous going forward with a guy like that.
I like your middle reliever analogy, and it's especially painful for you and I as Orioles fans because the only team that seems to develop any talented middle relievers that have staying power is the Orioles, but they can't hold on to any of them. So Zach Britton, Darren O'Day, who else I met, Pedro Strop, you know, all these guys were like dominant for like 3 or 4 years, but only 1 year for us. And then, you know, good for everybody else.
And then there's no one else who can play on that team. So
yeah, they just gave it all away. You know, Dylan Bundy, is he still around? That's
yeah,
like the
he
only
was at the Angels last year. He had a really good year.
Of course he did.
This is a good segment. Connor and Gary wonder about former Orioles.
Oh man, we're just roping you in. But no, I agree. So I think it's going to be interesting though, because here's how the calculus changes. If you are a team that's expecting the NFL to stay as the current NFL for like another 2 years, where you know you run first offenses aren't going to take over for another, you know, maybe year or two, and you're still going to have to worry about the Chiefs and the Cardinals and these teams who are going to throw the ball more often. You know, this is going to be a nice offseason to pick up a defensive back for $7 or $8 million for 1 year, and then hopefully, you know, these guys springboard into longer term deals for them. Like, I don't think any of these players are going to kill it on the free agent market, but at the same time, it'll be a nice deal for somebody out there.
Yeah, it's boy, the cornerbacks make me nervous. The receivers don't, though. It's just that there's so many receivers, and the draft class coming in is so good. I probably sort of deflated some of these rankings here anyway, but I do want to address Curtis Samuel and my love for Curtis Samuel at this point. I think he was used incorrectly the first couple seasons of his career. I think they found the right usage for him. I think Joe Brady found the right usage in making him a more of a catch-and-run threat last season, and had they not had an opportunity to add Robbie Anderson on a really team-friendly deal and had DJ Moore in there, I think Curtis Samuel could have been a guy who had, you know, 90 catches and 1,300 yards or whatever it might be. I think he's sort of in that mold of, you know, I'm not going to say he's like A.J. Brown or something like that. He doesn't have that kind of size, but I think he's in that mold of that sort of, you know, running back with the ball in his hands type of guy, and I think he is expanding his game as a receiver a little bit. I think his floor is sort of high-end number two receiver, and I think he's absolutely potential number one in the, you know, in the right spot here.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the counter to that is going to be you're going to have an offensive coordinator that's as good as Joe Brady. And I don't think that there's like, you know, I don't think there's 5 or 6 offensive coordinators that are better than him in the NFL right now. And so is there going to be a guy that's out there that can, you know, kind of develop Curtis Samuel and use him like that? Or is he going to end up on the Jets, you know, and kind of fade away? I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is there, but it's a fair point. Everything else about the list I like. I think that you did a good job of putting it together. I'm very, very curious to see where some of these guys end up in terms of, you know, there's a lot of older players, you know, a lot of guys who can probably be that final piece of the puzzle. Although last year it kind of instructed our thoughts on that. Like, we thought Calais Campbell was the guy that would push the Ravens over the edge. And I think that there are going to be those guys this year that sign and make us think that this team is going to be completely ready to push to the next level. But I don't know. It's an interesting list. A lot of old guys, a lot of bad times for old guys to be free agents. You know, as always, like one or two or three potential really dominant value signings out there. So
yeah,
I would check it out.
I think it's going to be a year where a lot of guys are bummed out with the kind of contract they end up settling for.
Mm-hmm.
we'll see. We'll have plenty of free agency stuff next week as we sort of, I don't know, by the time this podcast comes out, we'll probably be ramping up pretty well as far as the free agency hot stove season goes in the NFL, and that's what this podcast is all about. That and Orioles baseball at this point.
Oh, just can't wait for Orioles, a little more Orioles baseball this year. pitchers and catchers. But yeah, no, I think it's it's going to be super tiresome though. What's going to be super tiresome is the idea that so many more of these guys, since it's a down year, right, and there's not a lot of money being handed out, might go to the Buccaneers. You know what I mean? And then it's just furthers that narrative of, oh, the super team, you know, and here it goes. And I don't know. I think that might be a storyline in free agency. I think that it's going to further perpetuate the idea that, you know, I think there's going to be 3 or 4 teams that really attract the hive. You know, Cleveland might be another one, since they're already sent so far down that road of star-studded talent that the, it makes sense to just continue loading up there. But I don't know. You know, I think it's one of those situations where we'll see what happens. But you know, if the metrics bear out and people want more Orioles talk on this podcast, like I could watch some Adley Rutschman all day, baby, and we can talk about the future of the catcher position because we finally got somebody there. So
just like when we had Matt Wieters.
Oh,
it's gonna be wonderful.
That up.
No, he's gonna be better. But I couldn't name five players on their 25-man roster. I'm sure it's just brutal. And
do you want to try real quick?
Oh,
I'm gonna pull it up. Just give it a go.
Okay, so they traded Alex Cobb.
Correct.
So he's not there, and they've traded Michael Givens.
Mm-hmm. There's one you gotta get.
Trey Mancini.
Yep. There's one you gotta get because you can't get rid of him.
Can't get rid of him. Oh, Chris Davis.
Yeah. So that's two.
Yep. Boy. That might be it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, Hunter Harvey was the other one that I knew, but other than that, this seems to be a largely anonymous roster, devoid of star power.
And they've got
Freddie Galvis. Freddie Galvis.
Boy, that's the most excitement his name has ever warranted. they got that Rio Ruiz. Is he still on the team? Is that a name I just made up?
No, Rio Ruiz is still on the team. Yep.
There we go. So I got three. Nice.
So there you go. Yeah, you know, we're in good shape. World Series or bust.
Yeah. World Series 2044.
Let's do it.
All right, Connor. Lots of free agency stuff coming up this week. I'm sure you and Jenny on the Weekside Podcast will have plenty to discuss as far as that goes. And thanks for being on. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of the podcast is Scott Brody. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. And Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weekside Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.